At Her Spirit, we're here for you. We want to help you discover your potential, achieve your goals, ignite your fitness, find your community. Head to herspirit.co.uk and sign up for our core membership. Get access to our virtual classes, monthly challenges, expert advice, and track your progress in our health hub. You'll also find your very own cheerleading squad who will support you every step of the way. Use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 and get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Her Spirit podcast. We're still a little bit starstruck, I think, aren't we, Annie, after last week, and Mel C, who's now I consider to be my Bezzy alongside you.
Oh, my God. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely adored her, loved her. You know, I think she was better than I thought, you know, in the sense that so grounded, you know, life experiences have made her, you know, a really interesting person. So, yes. Yeah, we're still slightly in awe of the fact that we had Mel C, Sporty Spice, on last week. But I think it's really important to talk about you this week, Louise, because often you're, you know, you're so lovely. You always say, how are you, Annie? What are you doing? This week, Louise mentioned, it is all about you. And to our listeners, we are on a Zoom call and Louise is there with a big fat medal hanging up over her face.
Over
the medal
my face.
Is so big. This is a sporting medal from a half Ironman. Now, this is a race that is going to take around about 6 hours plus. It's a 1.9K swim. It's a 90K bike and it's a half marathon. And our Louise Minchin won her age group at the weekend.
Annie, you're too kind. I love you. So look, here it is. It says 2,000 meter swim, a 78K bike, actually. So it wasn't too far the bike. And it was 20K run. So just 1K off a half marathon. And honestly, Annie, the run was one of the worst runs I've ever done in my whole life. Mostly because I was thinking I was just going to do... I mean, listeners will go, why would she only do the swim and the bike? I was only going to do the swim and the bike because, you know, I love the sport called aqua bike and I needed to get a time. And then I figured, we're in 2020. This is the only race this year that I've been able to do in real life, as opposed to virtual London, anything or whatever it has been. I thought, all right, I'm going to do the run, but I only decided that last week. Oh my gosh, Annie. I mean, somebody said to me, did you not want to do it? Did I not want to do it? About 25 times. I was like, I'm not going to run. I've got a stone in my foot. Everything really hurts. But as you said, I carried on.
And that's what's brilliant. And actually, that's a lesson to a lot of people out there, is that you haven't been doing this crazy sports stuff for a long, long time. You've been doing it, what, the last 5 years?
Yeah. And also, but also what I'd forgotten, because I had not trained for this specific event, basically. And I'd forgotten that every time I normally do a triathlon, and this is a lesson to everybody who's thinking of doing one. I think some of you are, aren't you? Is that you must practice that thing when you get off the bike and you go on the run, because it is just like, I mean, I can't describe to you, you know, the feeling, Annie, but it was my whole body's going, this is wrong. Why are you running? You should be on your bike.
But anyway, I mean, you know, never mind the fact that, okay, the run was a bit wobbly because you hadn't really trained for it. That's by the by. You managed that. The 2K swim. Let's talk about that. First girl out by over 5 minutes. Louise Minchin, BBC Breakfast newsreader, super chick, beats every other woman out by 5 minutes.
But what it makes me think is I should just do swimming races and not running in them.
No, we need to talk about your run. We need to talk about your run. I'm going to sort your run out. Do you know what? You've said it all. You didn't train for it. So there you go. So you get what you... Yeah, get back in your box. So you need to run more and you will like it more.
Yeah. And also, everybody, just to be really clear, I'm so excited because A, I finished it. I got my finisher's medal. And then I got an email saying that I won my age group. And then I said to them, they said, you've got a trophy, Annie. I'm going to get a trophy. And the best thing about that is that guess how many people were in my age group? I've already told you. Just me.
Listen, and I told you what my lovely late dad used to say to me, doesn't matter who's in the race. It really doesn't. It's irrelevant. You know, at the end of the day, the result is the result. You do not run around telling everyone there was no one in your age group. The fact of the matter is you won your age group, Louise Minchin.
But you know, it would have been so much better if I'd known that that was a possibility. That run would, you know, it mentally, that run would have been so much easier. Anyway, those are my adventures, guys. I'm over the moon because I've done a race and I've got a medal. I'll show you the trophy, Annie, whenever I get it. And we've got a podcast to get on with.
We really have. have, yes.
Once again, we've got a brilliant guest coming up, Annie, and you know her because through your twin sister, don't you?
Yes, they're very, very good friends. So I really have been very lucky to spend a bit of time with Nikki and had good chats over a couple of glasses of wine. Listen, it is our Her Spirit podcast, and if we weren't talking about wine, there would be something wrong. Anyway, our next most amazing guest, very exciting. She's going to have so much exciting information. Her life experiences are huge. It is Dr. Nikki Kanani. She is the medical director of primary care for NHS England and NHS Improvement. Hello, Nikki.
Hi, Nikki.
Hello. Thanks for having me. It's really great to join you and get some Annie time instead of just Charlotte time.
Oh. Oh, you don't want just my twin sister, do you? No, you don't.
Oh, no, both.
Can I, before we go on, and we've got so much to talk to you about, do they look, really similar, don't they, Nikki? Annie and Charlotte, the twins.
Louise, what always gets me is they sound the same as well. So I still think I'm just talking to Charlotte. And then I see, obviously, and I can tell the difference, not being funny. You can tell the difference, but it's the voice is so similar. So for me, I'm just like, oh, Charlotte's here. Hello.
Sometimes I'm shouting at my kids and I hear my sister's voice and I think that sounds like Charlotte shouting at her kids. Not that we do very often, of course.
Nikki,
tell us how you are, because as medical director of primary care of NHS England, you must have been incredibly busy over the last 6 months. And let's not forget, you are a mum, you're a wife, you've got two children. How are you?
Thanks for asking, Annie. I'm okay. I think the term I've used with Louise is I'm surviving when people ask if I'm surviving. But I think that's sort of where the whole profession is. Everyone has tried in all parts of the health service. People have tried to just keep going and do the best that they can for their patients, for their teams. And it has been incredibly chaotic. I've never known a time like this. And so particularly the first sort of 3 or 4 months, I'm not sure when it comes to looking after ourselves, I'm certainly not sure about sort of sleep. I didn't drink at all, actually. I just thought it was really important to be very, very clear-headed and focused on what was the biggest job that I've ever really had to do. So surviving. I'm very grateful that the kids are back at school for their sake more than anything. They are desperately ready to be around other children and to spend time with people. And so I'm really grateful that they're back. And now we're just trying to be ready for what comes next, which might well be another wave. And we certainly know that winter's coming. So we've just got to keep the energy up, really.
I mean, you know, just listening to you, the admiration that we all have for all of you who've been working in the NHS through these really incredibly difficult times, and I say really important times, and really, you know, the pressure on all of you to keep it together has been staggering, which you've done. Now, tell us about, your job, just give us an idea, primary care, this is a massive job. What does it entail? What does it mean?
Absolutely. So primary care is everything that happens outside of hospital, essentially. So it is general practice, pharmacy, dentistry, optometry, making sure that people, when they first need the NHS, get the care that they need. So often it is, often it is your GP, but very much your pharmacist is in the heart of the community as well. So my job is about making sure that those services work in the way that we need them to, make sure that they're accessible for people, make sure that they change in the way that we need them to when big things hit like this. So obviously we'd been sort of planning for the future anyway, but not really been in the position to have to change so much so quickly. So, really very much at the moment, giving that support to the system, making it possible contractually and financially to sort of completely change the way that they work, that colleagues are working pretty much over a couple of weeks. So those first few weeks of quarantine or sort of early lockdown, we had practices and colleagues around the country fully changing the way they work to keep the system safe.
Did we just see your cat?
We did just see Nikki's cat walk across the
street. Did your cat just walk across the desk?
So we got lockdown kittens going off on a slight tangent, got lockdown kittens.
No, we'll come back. Don't worry. This is where we go with this podcast.
So they're incredibly affectionate. And the girl is absolutely gorgeous. And she can't stop herself when she's sort of feeling like she needs a cuddle. So I'm so we'll just have to ignore her. But they're a big part of our lives now and they've been a massive help for my mental health as much as anything else over lockdown.
Oh, we will go back to primary care because, of course, that's so important. But before you were on the podcast, Annie, Ruby, my black Labrador, who you know I am completely and utterly besotted with, was also up on my knee as well. And we were talking, weren't we, Nikki, about you genuinely how extraordinarily helpful pets can be to your mental health. And it took me by surprise.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've got lots of pet therapy options. So hospitals around the country, you know, care homes and others do have pet therapy. And we've got some great charitable organisations that organise pet therapy, you know, particularly for children or people with learning disabilities. But having said that, even knowing all of that, it was only when we got these two in our lives that we sort of fully understood how much it changed us as a family. And and I'm very grateful because sort of on some of the darkest days, you only need someone like this to come and try and have a cuddle, and you can see how brilliant it is.
It's quite funny to paint a picture to our listeners. We're on a Zoom call and we're deep into, you know, a fairly serious conversation there with Nikki, you know, about her job at primary care. And then this little black cat walks across the screen. So it was really hard to ignore that one.
You were talking, Nikki, weren't you, before your lovely cat was in the picture, about change and about the speed of change. And, you know, we were all, you know, we were going to do this podcast, for example, in a very minor way compared to what you've had to do. We were going to be in a studio. We'd found a studio, hadn't we, Annie? We'd recorded two podcasts, snuggled up together, remember, virtually sitting on each other's knee. And then everything changed. And I think what I want to know from you is, you know, these are very real changes and presumably they're going to be with us for a while.
Yes.
You know, are some of them presumably are good.
Yes, absolutely. So what we've achieved over the last few months across the whole health service, have been some really, you know, there's been some really fantastic kind of innovations and ways of working. I guess what the challenge has been is that people continue to be quite anxious about coming forward for their healthcare. So essentially what that means is people are worried. They're worried about getting COVID. They're worried about being a burden on the health service. So we really do want people to come forward. We want people to come and get their cervical screens done. We want people to have their immunizations done. We want people to get the care that they need. However, we are delivering it differently. So particularly in general practice, you know, we are doing something called remote triage. So we're triaging people before they are able to, you know, before we actually, do anything, before we actually offer them any care, because we're trying to make sure that they're seen by the right person and in the right way. What that could mean is, you know, if somebody gets in touch with us, I might not be the right person to see them. It might be the pharmacist. It might be the physiotherapist. It might be our practice nurse. And we don't, you know, it's really important that we continue that triage to make sure that patients get care with the right person first, instead of just going sort of straight to GP, which is what we used to do a lot previously.
You know, it's a tough time, you know, health-wise for so many people, for, you know, the reasons you've mentioned there, you know, and so many more. But you, in terms of being a mum of two, working so hard, you know, how have you coped? How have you had that time to look after yourself and take some time out, rest and do some exercise? We know you were training for the London Marathon, which of course has sadly been cancelled. So would you say that was your go-to for your kind of release, your kind of mental, you know, and physical?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a huge part of my lockdown life. Obviously I continued doing my GPing. So I was going in every week, you know, getting into PPE, seeing patients, speaking to patients on the phone. But for the medical director role, it was we were asked to obviously come out of our offices, work from home for safety. And actually, I had to. I've got an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old. The 8-year-old needed quite a lot of support through her homeschooling. So she'd sit sort of right next to me where I am here. And I remember one day, I was on a ministerial call, really important, thinking about how we're going to manage, how we're going to cope. And I had Naya, my 8-year-old, next to me going, "Well, I need to make a cake, Mummy, for my Roman Empire project." And the juxtaposition was huge. So in one sense, the kids kept me sane. My son's 12. He was able to go off in his room and sort of do his work and do his lessons. But just being able to interact with them during the day lifted me out of kind of the doldrums of what were, 18, 20 hour days at the height of it. What we did do, and it sounds slightly ridiculous, but it was genuinely the only time I sort of had was carve out sort of 40 minutes so that the three of us, mainly my kids and I, would do a 5K, and it would be sloppy and it would be slow, but it meant that I was running, because again, in the height of the pandemic, I didn't feel comfortable going out for particularly long runs. I did think that I would end up eventually doing my marathon, and I am. It's just going to be slightly different. It's, it's a virtual marathon. So I did realise that actually one of the things that did go down, even though I maintained my sort of running for my mental health and for the kids' mental health, I wasn't at the level that I had been pre-lockdown, where I'd sort of hit my 21 miles and I was incredibly proud of myself because I hadn't, I'm not a runner. So I was so proud of myself. And I knew I hadn't got the capacity to get back to that. But what I needed to be able to do was do something. So I'm going to walk. And I was looking at kind of walking options. Slightly bizarrely, but really important to me. I'm walking for Doctors of the World that provide healthcare to people who are predominantly refugees and migrants in this country, but also abroad. And my dad was a refugee and my mum was a migrant. So my dad particularly came here in 72 from Uganda, and he stayed at a refugee camp in Newham on Greenham Common. And he was staying there for 6 months. So I'm going to walk to Greenham Common, which is about 60 miles. So I'm going to do it over the weekend. But it felt like an appropriate kind of tribute to both what my family went through, but also the work that Doctors of the World do in terms of offering healthcare in those really difficult scenarios, and to sort of raise the profile of what they do. So it's very different now, but that's kind of, my fitness has sort of changed over lockdown. I will get back to longer running, and it's always going to be kind of part of mine and the children's lockdown story, I think, because it was our way of having a connection, because it got us out of the house, it got us away from screens, and it was our way of just having a conversation. And I remember one day when my son was really struggling, that kind of pre-teenage, he should be hanging out with his friends in the park, not with his mum at home. And he was completely overwhelmed. And I remember him just stopping and going, "I don't know how to do this." And I sort of had to stop as well. And I sort of went, "Well, neither do I. And we're just going to have to work through it together." So I'm grateful for the time that lockdown gave us as a family. I don't think I could go through that again for any of us. It was definitely one that we, will always remember as much as anything.
So did you pretty much do it every day, 5K? Because that's a lot.
Yeah, we did. I was really chuffed with this because I wasn't sure that we'd be able to do that. But I found that the way that I structure my day and with the meetings that I had and everything else, I wasn't really in a position to sort of go out very much. So we weren't sort of doing a lot of walks or anything. So our movement had just reduced to the space in our house. And it just, it wasn't good for any of us, I guess, emotionally or physically. So I just felt that, 5K, gets our steps up, gets us in the fresh air, gets us feeling at least slightly that we are feeling and breathing the outdoor air. And the kids were brilliant. I mean, I think Ash, my son, was much more confident. So towards the end, he was running ahead and getting ahead and doing extremely well, and just generally is a great runner. My daughter and I would sort of plod on a little bit, but it got us out, it got us in the fresh air, and it got us moving. So sometimes it'd be painfully slow and we'd argue our way around. And other days you think, oh, wow, look at us. We can do this.
It's so weird that to me, because there seems to be no rhyme or reason until you go out. Some days you obviously feel tired before you go out, but until I'm actually running, I don't know whether it's going to be a good run or a bad run.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
And I think that's, you know, a really important message as well, because I think so many times we're at home go, oh, this is going to hurt. And just talking about the children, you know, I did quite a few runs with my kids, and I tell you what, they whinged and whinged. It was like, no, I don't want to go out for a run. And some days I came so close to giving in, but actually, you know that you're all going to be so much better afterwards. Yes. They were, and within 3 minutes of being out, you know, they're running, you know, there would be a few little scraps along the way about who went through the gate first and stuff like that, usual kiddie stuff, but on you, 9 times out of 10 you are going to feel so much better for it. They are, and you are, and that's something that I think we always encourage at Her Spirits, just to get out there and try it. And you know, when you're sitting at home, it's all warm and lovely and you just think, oh, I don't want to. But you never regret having got out and walked, ran, exactly, whatever it is you do, and been active.
And I think for Naya, particularly my 8-year-old, she, you know, I didn't move a lot growing up, and I really need that to be a big part of her life. Where we got to in the end of it was, what's the worst that's going to happen? The worst that's going to happen is we're going to stop, and then we're going to walk a bit, and then we'll get going again. That's okay. It's okay. It just means that we've got there and we've got out. And as you said, you know, you never regret it once you're out, or at least once you're back, you don't regret having gone.
I think what you said about the sort of bonding as well that can happen when you are running or doing something, you know, regularly with your children, that is not necessarily comfortable as well. Do you see what I mean? Maybe that's maybe that's part of it, that it's not an easy thing. So maybe that's why you know, because I've certainly bonded, as and Annie knows as well, and anybody who's listened to this podcast. I mean, I have run miles and miles and miles with my daughter over lockdown that we just wouldn't have done otherwise, and had conversations we wouldn't have had.
I think there is something about, I think particularly, apparently, particularly with boys, walking or running alongside them, they're more likely to sort of open up. And I think that's a male thing as well. I certainly, if I'm walking somewhere with my husband, we definitely talk a lot more than if we're sort of sat facing each other sometimes. That, you know, that was definitely the case for my son, but my daughter as well. It was, you know, there were some really special moments actually, as we were sort of exploring, you know, actually not that far from home, but just sort of exploring what was going on and how we were reacting, and actually giving each other quite a bit of support through it as well.
Oh, it's lovely.
So Nikki, when we look at how lockdown has gone, a frightening statistic is the fact that women's participation in sport and activity has dropped by, well, kind of, I don't know if we're heading to 10%. I know it's around about 7-8%, whilst men has increased. And the numbers out there are that less than 25% of women are active enough for a health benefit. I mean, that those are kind of quite frightening numbers. So in your opinion as a GP, you know, what do we do to help women? What do we do to change that?
I mean, this is a massive society issue, isn't it, Annie? One of the things that we found with our healthcare, so women in healthcare, we've sort of done surveys and explored their experiences of the lockdown, and they ended up, you know, being, as you said, you know, they're caregivers, they're homemakers, but also working from home full time as well. And suddenly you weren't working from home, you were living in your office, because actually your space became your office and everything else that you were doing. And that time to look after yourself just disappeared for so many people. And actually, if we're truly going to value and look after and retain women in the workplace and as the incredible part of society they are, we're going to have to think about and actually take action on the gender pay gap differently. We're going to have to respect flexible working in a different way. I mean, one of the big things that we've done through lockdown actually is publish our commitment in the health service that anyone who wants to work flexibly will be able to, because that flexibility is how people are going to build in some self-care. You know, most of us, if we're working very traditional hours in very traditional ways and doing the, you know, doing the school run and doing the, you know, doing the commute and all of that, we completely understandably forget about the self-care element and how we're actually going to build in the exercise and the time for ourselves. So moving to a society that is more flexible, that's more respectful of you being part, you know, your work self and your home self and everything else is a big part of it. And so particularly in, you know, in general practice, but one of the other things that COVID has exposed is that, you know, I think early days of COVID, people said, oh, it treats everyone fairly. No, it doesn't. You know, if you're BME, if you're overweight, you know, it does affect you more. So actually, we have to take action on some of these things that we now know about. There is a very thoroughly sort of and deeply thought through obesity strategy that's being rolled out across the country, you know, this year and into next year, because again, we know that that is one of our modifiable risk factors. And we do now have that responsibility to help members of the public look after themselves and not just avoid the traditional long-term conditions that we've always worried about, but also make sure that they avoid COVID. And if they do get it, they're as well as possible so that they have as a lower risk of complication as possible as well.
Because the facts on weight and coronavirus are really stark, aren't they?
Yeah. At Her Spirit, we know how powerful women can be. We love your strength, your determination, your compassion. We love the energy that sparks when we connect and spur each other on. Her Spirit was created to ignite that flame of determination, to unleash your energy, to build your self-belief, and to help every woman find a way to your healthiest mind, body, and soul yet. We want to inspire 1 million women just like you to be active, healthy and happy because you deserve it. Head to herspirit.co.uk, join our core membership and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. Join our monthly challenges, get access to the Her Spirit Health Hub and track your activity levels, mood, food, sleep and stress every single week with your own personalised dashboard. Get expert advice and join daily live classes that can be played back at any time. Plus, find the support that you need to get started and stay motivated. Just sign up at herspirit.co.uk and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Yeah, they really are. And weight is such a complicated subject in society. And it is actually, as we all know, you know, it's multifactorial and it is as much about your social capacity to, we often talk about, oh, you know, just batch cook for the week. Well, actually, if you're living out of a one bedroom place that has a microwave at best, you don't batch cook. And actually, we have to be much more sensitive to that. And it has to be a much more health, social care kind of responsibility to offer other ways of accessing good weight and health advice. And you know, we're starting to do that, but it is a huge and often uncomfortable conversation with members of the public, which is quite hard to broach that conversation.
We've talked a bit about on this podcast, and I'm really interested in the kind of move towards kind of what you call social prescribing.
Yes.
Is that going to be very much part of your, you know, what GPs are doing, what we're all going to be doing? And just explain what I don't even know what I mean. So you explain.
So I won't take any responsibility for the title because I think it probably doesn't tell you what it really means, but I'm a massive fan of it. So the idea is...
Oh, that's why I'm confused.
Yeah, so the concept is actually really, really sensible. So I, as a GP, probably see everything under the sun. So it could be housing issues or money issues. It could be health issues, but it isn't always. It could be family issues. And you can sort of see why that happens. If we think pre-COVID, the change in society where lots of people are becoming more lonely, we've lost that community infrastructure. People don't have naturally kind of spaces or people that they can go and talk to. And over the last certainly 5-6 years, the number of people who come for non-strictly health-related issues has risen exponentially. And actually, if you think about health and wellness, your ability to have safe and clean housing, to have money, you know, to have a secure employment, they are the things that are the building blocks of your health, almost more so than coming to see your GP. And as we've realised that, what we've realised is we need to bed into healthcare the ability for people to connect into society again. So have a social prescription. And the way that it works is quite simple. I'll describe it pre-COVID because it probably is a bit more sensible. But
yeah,
if somebody got in touch with a practice, and we've rolled this out across the country so that this is something available through all practices, although some are further along in terms of offering the services, it's available across the country now. If you get in touch with the practice and you see your GP or you speak to the reception, or some places have care coordinators, and you sort of talk a little bit about what your issues might be, what you will often be offered, or you'll start to be offered more often, is an appointment with a social prescribing link worker. So that's somebody who knows the local community and has the time and the capacity to sit with you. And so those appointments are often longer than your traditional 10 minutes, half an hour, understand your kind of capacity for wellness and your connectivity into the community, and then make a plan for you. So it's a little bit like health coaching, but make a plan for you to connect back into the community. So it might be, the community cafe has dementia drop-ins, and you might be in early stages of dementia and feeling very isolated. You know, actually, you could go there. My best, so I set this up in my old patch before I was in this role. And my best example, so she's still a patient of mine, and she asks me to use her name because she's so proud of what she achieves through it. So Vi is now in her 80s, but when I first met her, she was in her early 70s, and she became a widow sort of in her 60s, and her health was just deteriorating, and she was getting so lonely that she couldn't go. She could only come and see me because I was on her block, because she got scared of crossing the road. And so if I would come in every week, you know, round the block, come and see me. You know, I'm worried about this, I'm worried about that. And we set up this social prescribing initiative. And I said to Vi, can you be my first patient? And we connected her into the local community. And she started befriending at the church. And anyway, long story short, I now barely see her. I see her for Christmas and she'll come in and give me my box of biscuits. And I really never see her for her health issues at all, because she doesn't really have many health issues at all. She now helps other people. She started tap dancing again a couple of years ago. She fell in love, and she went, oh, he's ever so young. She went, he's about your age. She went, she said, oh, he's in his late 60s, early 70s. I was like, am I? Okay, that's fine. You know, he's young like you, Nikki. She calls me Nikki now. And so her whole relationship with health changed, because she got a community and she got connections and she was tap dancing. And a couple of years ago, she did come in to see me again. And she was really down about her garden. And we got the Good Gym, which is an initiative where local communities run and provide care for other people. So, you know, you get people in a local area, they'll run to so-and-so's house, tidy up their garden, so it's manual, and then they run back. So the local community gets healthier. And so for Vi, the Good Gym and Bexley ran to her, tidied up her garden, ran back, and she was delighted because she could sit in her garden again. So social prescribing is very much about that. It's about helping people reconnect with their community. And actually, it wouldn't be fair of me as a GP not to say this. Helping to transfer some of the work, because general practice is under a huge amount of pressure, because it was giving a lot of care and consideration to people's non-health issues. And you know, I don't mind doing that, but I'm not the best person to do that. You know, my social prescribing link worker is, you know. So as we rebuild those community connections,
okay,
you know, fingers crossed.
So their course, I've never heard of one before. So social prescribing link worker, and this is going to be available across
across England. What we've done to start off with is ask practices to work with the practices around them in networks. So networks of practices working together. So we've got about 7,000 practices around the country, and the practices around the country have grouped into little networks of sort of support where they can share services and staff called primary care networks. And there's 1,200 of those around the country. And all of them now have social prescribers in place. And then they will have multiple and they'll have little teams that are able to look after that community.
That is absolutely brilliant. And I hadn't heard of it either. And I guess it's right across the board. So it's, you know, it might be a 20-year-old that's just feeling lonely. Yeah. They're a bit lonely. But, you know, maybe they're not sure which direction they're going on. Maybe they put on some weight. I mean, it makes so much sense. It really does. And I just think, yes, like you say, it takes the load off you. And I think it's very difficult for GPs because you can't sort someone's life out in 10 minutes and that's about all you've got. Yeah. And then that person goes away feeling very unfulfilled, you know, so no one's happy, you're not happy, they're not. But now there is this new solution, which is absolutely amazing. Do you mind if we just have a little chat? Because I think you'll agree, Louise, we always like to get to know our guests a little bit better. And good talking luck. To you... Louise is going to, Annie's off on one now. In terms, you know, I would say you're pretty young at the age of 40 to have already had the experience, to have the weight on your shoulders that you have from the position that you're now in. You talked about your wonderful mum and dad, a refugee and a migrant. How did you get into medicine? How did it all start? What did your childhood look like and the education that drew you into medicine and this job you're in now that you find yourself occasionally working 18 hours to 20 hours a day?
Dad came over, and he was in his late teens. So obviously he'd been in the refugee camp and then they'd been given social housing up in Newcastle. And then he went to a polytechnic and that's where he actually met mum, who'd come over from Kenya a few years ago. And they settled down here and I just think it's amazing that they came from that background and they became community pharmacists and so worked all hours under the sun, as many people do. But sort of quite amusingly, they got married, got the pharmacy, and then they had me. And so trying to establish a pharmacy in the early 80s, they couldn't really put me anywhere. So they used to bring me into the pharmacy and I used to be in the wire basket. I was the baby on the side of the till. So they still get patients. They call them their patients. So they're still in the same place. They've celebrated 40 years last year in the pharmacy, obviously. And they still get patients coming in saying, oh, where's that little girl? You know, and we still go and do a Christmas Eve shift so that, you know, the old patients can see us. And they still come in and go, oh, I knew you when you were in the... So I think what came from that is because we grew up literally in the pharmacy, we grew up with a really strong sense of community and being there to look after our community. I didn't actually think I was going to do medicine, though. Annie, you will laugh because you know what your twinnie would rather do. So I always thought I'd act. And long story short, and Charlotte wanted to go into health. So it's quite funny, really.
No.
But anyway, yeah, it's just bizarre. So Annie's twin, I hope she won't mind me saying it, has always, you know, loved healthcare and has actually come and kind of hung out in our GP practice and, you know, learn about healthcare because she loves it. I'd be the other anyway. Interestingly, I then sort of took an about turn of my own choice, kind of went, oh, actually, I really want to do health. My parents said no, because they sort of said, oh, it's incredibly hard work. We've worked all these hours in the pharmacy because they were one of those, you know, 12 hours a day, 7 day a week pharmacies. We don't want that lifestyle for you. Don't do it. So I rebelled atypically for an Asian daughter, where most yes, Asian parents exactly. were saying, go into medicine. and mine were saying, no, please don't. Anyway, so I did medicine. Loved it, but also got very involved in kind of the flow of how patients would or would not be cared for in health services. And so as I went along, I ended up getting involved in a lot of sort of service redesign. And that's how I ended up on this kind of career path rather than full-time medicine. And I've always really enjoyed doing the full-time medicine, but also having the opportunity to kind of change services. So I ran sort of local services and then bigger services, and then came to the national team in a deputy way, and then took on the full kind of portfolio a couple of years ago, because I wanted to kind of be able to influence the political, the policy and the kind of strategy side, which I sort of hadn't been able to do by working in the practice. So it's definitely been a rollercoaster, Annie, in terms of your, the last few years have sort of been, as my coach says, slightly crazy paving, but I'm very grateful to be in conversations where I can really think carefully about what we do with our health service, how we look after it, because it's one of our most valuable assets and we absolutely need to protect it.
You talk about coach. Is that a life coach?
We're not quite there in health. So it's professional coach. Although I think we should be. I think we should be thinking much more holistically. And we've got an incredible Prana, who's our chief people officer, who's new to the organisation, is absolutely thinking about that and how we embed some of those techniques into how we look after our leaders and managers. But no, this is my sort of professional coach. Dave will love that he's had a call out. He doesn't get mentioned half as much as he should do.
Hi, Dave.
But he has been my sanity over years, where, you know, I've talked about being Asian in health, I've talked about being a woman in health, and so usually your point about age, I'm often the youngest, but also the clinician, the Indian woman with kids in the room, which is often quite a challenging discussion and a place to come from, because my viewpoint is very different, but rightly so. And we absolutely need to be thinking about all of those facets as we design and deliver healthcare.
Well, that's, that's so much part of the sort of ongoing wider discussion, isn't it? It's kind of like, you know, we need someone like you with a different background or two kids, whatever it is. Diversity of thought,
yes,
is where you have ideas, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have made a commitment. So my boss, Simon Stevens, made a commitment in terms of at least healthcare that we should have essentially a quota on boards to make sure our boards are diverse. Because actually, if boards aren't diverse, they don't reflect the local community, then they can't create services for that community, because they won't understand what it means to live in the north, you know, mile patch in the north of the borough, where you're in multiple owner occupancy, one room flats, with no access to healthcare, versus in the leafy green south part of the borough, where, you know, you're used to going into the GP every week, you know. And if you don't understand that, and if you've not lived it or experienced it or understand what that means in terms of accessing healthcare, you can't offer healthcare properly.
Mm. Nikki, I'm really conscious that you've got to go. God, I'm surprised we've had you this long. Not helped by the fact, but as per usual, Annie's had some sort of technical problems. can we ask, we've got a little sort of project going at Her Spirit, really important. We're getting 5 top tips for your best year yet. So in terms of the people that would be listening to Her Spirit, the patients that you see in your clinics, you know, 5 top tips to great, great living.
Okay. Give yourself 5 minutes every morning. I am very variable about this, you know, and it's really easy to jump into the day and to jump onto your phone and start planning and sorting your life. One of my kind of mentors talks about decision fatigue and how quickly you can just be exhausted by the amount of decisions you have to make in a day. So give yourself 5 minutes before you get out of bed and just have a look at the day and think about what's going to be there for you in that day, which brings me on to my second point, which is, second top tip is, one thing a day has to be for you. And that's not that 5 minutes. So 5 minutes is just the centre of your brain, but you have to have one thing for you. And whether that's, I try and do this every night, just reading 2 pages of your book, or, you know, jumping on your exercise bike, or just going outside and, you know, smelling the fresh air. Really, really need to do that. Number 3, human connection. Speak to somebody every day. And that sounds really easy when we've got kids and people around, but actually it's really not that easy for a lot of the people that I look after. So whether it is, on the high street and genuinely in a queue trying to talk to somebody, and if you're on the receiving end of that, of somebody trying to have a conversation, please talk back. Our society is so fragmented, and particularly through COVID, even if it's through a mask, talk back and be there for that other person who is often just incredibly lonely. I do want to say something about food. I think, you know, as I said, we talk really easily about batch cooking and cooking healthily, but give yourself permission to have something healthy every day. And even if it is, you know, you go in at the end of when the supermarket's closing, it's a clearance grapes that are there for 20p. Please, please, please permit yourself to have those and share those out with your family, because actually they are that bit of wellness that you can do for yourselves. Where are we? 5. Go to bed believing in yourself and finding one thing every night that you are proud of yourself for. I'm terrible at doing this, but I'm trying to do this with the kids well before COVID. So just a moment of gratuity when we sit there and we recognize something that was good in the day, so that then it does feel like you can go to bed with a bit of a lighter heart.
Oh gosh. I was trying to write it all down actually, because they were so good. What kind of thing when you, that's, I'm really fascinated about that, going to bed saying something good about yourself is what you said more or less, wasn't it? What sort of things do you put in that bank?
I'm not as good at this. My daughter's brilliant. And she will find things like, today I was just beautiful. Today I was just really nice. So be more like my daughter is probably the best advice I can give you. And Charlotte thinks this about my little one as well. You know, she's often kind of like, why is she so, you know, but she will sit there and kind of go, do you know what? Today I looked after someone else. I thought about someone else. I was kind to someone else. And so that's probably what I would want more than anything. Mine are often very specific things. I tolerated something today that I couldn't tolerate yesterday. And that's okay as well. But if you can be more Naya, be more Naya, because that's a lovely way to end your day.
But Naya's only got that from one place, right?
Exactly what I was going to say, Annie. Where has she got it from, Nikki? Where has she got that from?
Oh.
It's you. Oh, listen, Jan, we know you've got to go. That is such an optimistic note to end it on. It's been a real pleasure to see you, Nikki. Oh. I know you. What's next? Is it minister next, or is it?
No, that's in half an hour. I've got a team session. As I said, if I can just remind your listeners, please come. So the next session I've got is about how we get more people getting some of the healthcare, because some of our rates have dropped off. So if you're thinking about whether or not to have that scan or that vaccination or that checkup for that worrisome thing, please, please, please access healthcare. It's still here for you. And that's what I'm going to go off and work on now.
We've taken 3 minutes of that really important time, Nikki. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much, darling. You have been absolutely amazing, Nikki. It's so lovely to chat with you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for all your hard work.
Bye. Bye.
Annie, I love talking to Nikki. I know you've spent lots of time with her, but gosh, I mean, you know, we could have talked to her for hours more, and so many brilliant things she said. One of the things I wanted to pick up on, and she needed to go, and it's really not that important, but she made that point about us all, and this is particularly you rather than me and lots of people listening, living in your office. That's what's happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you know, people, and that's a big fundamental change, and means that you can't leave your office because it's your home.
Yeah. And I think that you're really right to raise that. And I think a really good example is my husband. You know, he sits sometimes at his desk for, I don't know how many hours a day, from, you know, before 8, and sometimes he's still sitting there at 7 o'clock in the evening or later, or starts earlier. And I have to say to him that this isn't healthy. You know, this, you have to get out and move. And there's always one more email that needs to be answered, one more call that needs to be made, but it's not healthy and it's not sustainable. It's just simply not. And, you know, listen, I don't think there's any boss in the world that's going to be saying, you know, you can't. I think it's a little bit of discipline too, hey Louise. It's hard. It's really tough. You know, my husband, for example, as do a lot of people, work incredibly hard, but you have to have the discipline to go, I need that break. I need to go walk around my garden. I need to go and get a glass of water, get a healthy snack, or better still, go and get my heart rate up. And that might be 5 or 10 minute jog down the road, or if you're lucky enough to have a bit more time. But I think that is really important for longevity of the situation that we find ourselves in now.
And I worry for all those, you know, young people who, for example, have started out in a job and they're, I don't know, there's maybe three of them living in a flat or whatever it is. And, you know, you're on top of each other. There's no, you know, people are in small spaces and spaces which are not designed to be worked in.
No.
You know, they were designed for your safe space, your sleep space, whatever. And it's a real fundamental change, isn't it? And hard.
And let's not even go down the route of your desk situation and your chair situation. Because, you know, most sort of...
Yeah, and the two kids who haven't been at school situation also in the same space with you, etc.
Yeah, and so the added stress levels, you know, listen, it's all slightly confusing right now. That's an understatement.
It's the rule of six, Annie.
Yes, let's just keep our fingers crossed. And it's great talking to someone like Nikki who talks about the importance of exercise, that talks about the importance of, you know, even though it's such a difficult subject, obesity, and the importance of feeling well and looking after yourself as well as you can. And there are things that we most definitely can take responsibility for, I think. You know, there are certain things in life we definitely can't, but I think taking responsibility for our own health is absolutely key. And I loved her 5 points as well, you know, for a better year. I thought they were absolutely brilliant. Hey, how amazingly unassuming is Nikki? At the age of 40, head of primary care, you know, her upbringing, everything she does, what she puts back into the community. I mean, God, you know, definitely she deserves a huge award for that.
And then go back to the thing she said, which I was, again, really, it was really, really good thing to say, you know, give yourself permission to eat something healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? I've got a big thing about Lou, and I get very cross with the government and like a petrol station, going to a petrol station, and you stand there in your queue in Sainsbury's or something like that, which are always long because they have the cheapest fuel and you get your Nectar points and blah, blah, blah. And there's row upon row of chocolates and sweets and rubbish food. And I'd love to start a campaign to have that removed. And I've really gone off on one. And bless you, Lou, you're so used to me wanging on, going off on tangents, aren't you? But that's a big one that I've got that really annoys me.
Annie,
and I think it's difficult.
Go into politics.
I think it's politics. So hard for people. You know, there we are saying, eat less rubbish, eat less sugar. And there it is, stuck in your face. You know, come on, guys.
Right. On that note, I'm going to try not to take advantage of those things I see. Listen, Annie, so lovely to speak to you. Things, as you say, are in a bit of a change at the moment.
My children are back at school. I adore them. I mean, the saddest thing is they say, Mummy, you really wanted us to go back to school, didn't you? And it's like, yes, darling, but you needed to go back to school. There are, you know, different stories in this one. And actually, first day back, they absolutely loved it. You know, that's good for the mums, you know, that have had kiddies at home and have been trying to homeschool and work and run houses and stuff like that. So on a good note, children are back at school. Let's keep our fingers firmly crossed that it stays that way.
Bye, Annie. See you next
week. Lou.
Bye, darling.
Hi, my name's Mel Berry and I'm the co-founder of Her Spirit. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast and we hope you found it useful. I'd just like to say thanks to our sponsors, Medichex, who without their support, this wouldn't have been possible. Medichex offers simple to use blood tests. Wanting to strengthen your immunity or check for underlying conditions, they offer a home test with doctor's reviewed results. Just go to medichex.com to find out more. And remember, together we've got this. Have a great day.